We're talking basketball, college basketball, with Steve Lavin, the head basketball coach at St. John's. Let me take you back to UCLA for just a second, because you, of course, started with Gene Katie, and then you had an opportunity to go to UCLA with Jim Herrick. And, of course, you were an assistant coach at UCLA when they won the national championship. I believe that championship was played in Seattle, was it not?
1995.
Exactly. Tell me about that team. What was the catalyst of it? Why was it so successful? You only lost one game that year.
Well, we had seniors. Ed O'Bannon, who became the National Player of the Year. Tyus Edney, who made that coast-to-coast mad dash against Missouri in the second round up in Boise, Idaho, to keep the dream alive for the UCLA Bruins. And then George Zedek from the Czech Republic, a seven-footer, old-school pivot in the George Mikan mode with the swing hook, and played the game below the rim, fundamentally sound. So George Zedek, Ed O'Bannon, and Tyus Edney, it all begins with seniors that had a sense of purpose. They wanted to cut down the nets. They wanted to be the only team to win a national title outside of John Wooden's UCLA Bruins, who had won 10. And that gave this group distinction. And clearly, Jim Herrick, it was the pinnacle, the crowning achievement of his career. And he assembled a staff of Mark Gottfried, who's now at North Carolina State, Lorenzo Romar, who's up at the University of Washington, and myself, who's now at St. John's. And so it was a wonderful mix in terms of staff chemistry, the cohesiveness, the chemistry among the staff, as well as this team, and then some outstanding young talent, Toby Bailey, J.R. Henderson, Charles O'Bannon, Cameron Dollar. You put that all together, and it was one of those special, remarkable seasons, 32-1. The only loss was at Oregon to open up Pac-10 play.
Was there any moment in that season that was really a turning point for the team?
I'd say Ed O'Bannon from the beginning, even going back to the prior season, we lost in the first round to Tubby Smith's Tulsa Hurricanes. And after that game, Ed O'Bannon in the locker room stood up and just told the team, that's enough. We're going to be here next year cutting down the nets. And it started in that spring with conditioning and the commitment the players had to doing something special the following year. And it followed through the entire season. Ed just put the team on his back. Don't get me wrong. Tyus Edney and George Zedek and those other players we mentioned were instrumental. But it was clearly Ed O'Bannon's team. And there was one timeout against Cal in Pauley Pavilion where Ed turned to his brother Charles and really challenged him to the point where it brought Charles to tears. And it was a defining moment for our team and for Charles, because he elevated his level of play. And it was one of those experiences that only brothers can share. And while we were a part of it as a staff and the teammates to Charles and Ed, it was really their bond. And I think there was some resolve that came out of that game and that moment that was shared between these two brothers. And it showed their passion and their love for the game. And Ed, as an older brother, really challenging his younger brother to greatness. And we moved forward. And that was one of many aspects when you look at a season like that, Tyus's shot and other great comebacks along the way in the NCAA tournament. But it was a special season. It changed our lives, clearly.
I'm going to ask you about, because after that season was over with, Jim Herrick ran into some problems and was fired from UCLA for some indiscretions. You got named the interim coach, and I've always been fascinated by somebody that all of a sudden has to jump in the middle of something and has that label interim. One, did you expect to be named? Two, were you ready to be a head coach at a school of that nature, that big? And what is it like to be an interim head coach?
I'll tell you, it was interesting at 32 years old to be named the head coach of the UCLA Bruins. The best advice I received was from John Wooden, and that was to stay in your stance, to stay in the moment, and do the best that you can on a daily basis. And that's how we move forward. In other words, you can't have one foot in yesterday. You can't have one foot in tomorrow, which would be natural for an interim coach because you don't know your future. It was a scenario where they were interviewing coaches doing a national search, and they said, you may be here a week, you may be here a month, you may be here 2 months. So you really don't know what the future holds. And we were fortunate that we caught fire and won the Pac-10 that year, went to the Elite Eight, and we were, you know, moments short of a Final Four appearance. But I'd say John Wooden's advice and direction, and then having the training and the background under Gene Cady at Purdue and the assistant coaching years at UCLA helped prepare me for that moment. But naturally, no 32-year-old with no prior head coaching experience is prepared to take on the Roman Empire of college basketball, which is UCLA. My mother and father, you know, they were such outstanding teachers. And also Coach Hayward at Drake High School and my college coach, Kevin Wilson. You know, all those people help you get to a certain station in life. They're all preparing you for a moment like that, even though you never anticipate it. So I'd have to give thanks and give, you know, I'm definitely grateful that I had the number of people along the line that helped me prepare for that moment.
Let me ask you about John Wooden. I had him a number of times on this program. I love the man. Matter of fact, when he was at UCLA as the coach, I was doing the University of Washington basketball games, and I just enjoyed our conversations. But I remember one of the years in which he had taken his team to the Final Four, and it was down in Los Angeles at the center down there, and I ran into him after a game. They had won the game, and rather easily, but he was looking at the stat sheet, and I said, "Well, Coach, what did you think of the game?" He said, "Well," he said, "Ron," he said, "turnovers in basketball are like walks in baseball. They'll kill you every time."
And he was a big baseball fan.
But it was always said that after he stopped coaching at UCLA, it was the ghost of John Wooden over everybody. Cunningham followed him, as you know, Jim Herrick, yourself, and everything.
Larry Brown, Larry Farmer, yeah. Walt Hazard, Ben Howland.
How much of that is true? I mean, he was a great resource, but did he set a standard that every coach had to live up to some degree?
I saw the entire situation as a blessing, as a gift. The opportunity to learn from John Wooden for 12 years, because I was an assistant for five, a head coach for seven, and we had shared the common experience of the Purdue Boilermakers, because I worked under Gene Cady in the Big Ten at Purdue, and John Wooden had been a three-time All-American at Purdue and grown up in Indiana. So to me, it was a wonderful 12-year journey, a situation where you pinch yourself on a daily basis. And you know coming in the rules of engagement. No one makes it out alive at UCLA. That's just the way it is. Similar to the Yankees, there are certain sports institutions that you understand the standard is set so high that enjoy your time while you are there. Try and win as much as possible and know that it's coming to an end, but be grateful, be thankful to have played a part in this wonderful tradition of UCLA basketball. And I think if you don't understand that, if you don't have that perspective, it could be pretty tough. And there were challenging moments. But for me, John Wooden, you got to be kidding me. And when you speak to John Wooden, so little was about basketball. It was Gandhi. It was Mother Teresa. It was scripture. Mm-hmm. It was the Mills Brothers lyrics. It was Martin Luther King. It was Walt Whitman. This was a well-read man. He was brilliant. He was an English teacher. Late in his life, the last couple times I visited him, he was studying all world religions, trying to find the common ground among these different religions, trying to find the golden rule, so to speak. So Hinduism and Judaism and Catholicism. He happened to be a Christian and was inspired in that regard, but he was open and flexible in his thinking, and knew what was most important were these golden rules, not the differences between religions, but the commonalities. And this is when he was 98, 99 years old, that he was still inspired, an eternal learner, and still had that appetite for knowledge. And what a standard, what an example he sets for all of us.
Yeah, he had a mind. There was no doubt about it. And I enjoyed every conversation I have with him, had with him. I want to touch on a couple of other things, and I know we're running out of time here, but when you left UCLA and you decided to go into broadcasting and everything, I knew you were going to be a natural, because when you were in here 6 years ago, you could just tell it was going to be a natural thing for you. You were very, very successful. Why did you make that transition so seamlessly? What was it? How did you approach broadcasting after having been a coach?
Well, it's interesting. One is back to being a learner and having a father that was a teacher. And then my mother was a wonderful teacher in the home. She raised six children, and that was on an educator's salary. And my father, as you know, was an English literature, philosophy, and a poetry teacher, and also had that appetite to learn, an interest in ideas, and led that self-examined life. So I think it was wanting to learn. It was a new career. I was fortunate after being fired at UCLA to have this wonderful opportunity, this door that opens when ABC and ESPN comes along and hires me, and then to be teamed with Brent Musburger. As you know, my appreciation and love of broadcasters, that was something that was always an interest that I had. And so I think just studying, learning a new set of fundamentals. I had a broadcast coach named Bud Morgan. He was trained in classical theater, and ESPN brought him in the later stages of his career. He previously worked with CBS with broadcast talent. And we would review, you know, the work, the transcripts, the DVDs. And it helped that my father was a wordsmith, and he was always challenging me to come up with fresh and original language to say the same old things so you can keep that audience engaged. So I think if you're interested, Brent Musburger's best advice that he ever gave me was to stay interested, kid. And you can take that concept to every aspect of life. Stay interested in your marriage. Stay interested in your community. Stay interested in the world. Stay interested in others. And so his was specific to broadcast, and he thought the broadcaster that didn't make it didn't do the work. They weren't interested. And so staying interested in your work, your craft, your vocation, and the game itself that you're covering, and for that to be genuine and authentic, you have that gift. Not everyone has that gift.
Let me ask you about, you go to St. John's in 2010. In 2011, you run into a health issue, and you had prostate cancer. In early October 2011, you returned to the bench on November the 9th, and then coaching four games in a nine-day span before leaving the bench again. I'm sure that experience, because everybody says that when you have something that is life-threatening, you come to some realizations. Now, we only got a couple minutes here, but I'm just wondering what realization, Steve, you came to putting in balance, in perspective, something that you loved coaching, and life in itself.
Yeah, I'd say to boil it down, the three defining moments in my life was getting fired in 2003, was being diagnosed with cancer in 2010, and then losing my father in 2013. And it's interesting how those perceived setbacks or adversity or those challenging spots in our life is really where growth begins, because it does change the way you look at the world. It reminds us of what's really important, our faith, our family, our health, and if we're fortunate, a handful of friends that love you unconditionally. And so there's a return to the fundamentals of the most basic essentials. And I think getting fired and being diagnosed with cancer and losing my father, all three of those, I'm grateful to have experienced them because it does lead to a different perspective. Do we call it wisdom? I don't want to get too existential here. We'll be talking about Uno Mundo and Heidegger and Kant and some other guys. So we need a couple beers down the street if we're going to continue this conversation, Ron. You got to get the Jesuits in here.
Yeah. We got 45 seconds. When you look at coaching today, do you look at it any differently? I mean, are you after?
Or I should say the Vincentians. Let me cover myself. Yeah. I'm at St. John's. My dad was raised by the Jesuits. I'm being influenced by the Vincentians.
Do you look at anything differently? Do you look at anything differently?
Each day, it's gratitude for this breath, this moment. And unless you go through those experiences and deal with loss, the humility that comes with being fired, also a sense of humor, because humility and sense of humor are tied together. We're going to get into etymology here, Latin, Greek, where's this going to go? But you get the idea that humility from being fired and keeping a sense of humor, the self-deprecating element has to be in play. And you never get over the loss of a parent.
Steve, I want to thank you for coming into the studio because listening to you, we could go on for hours. I know we've been friends for a long time, but I'm so happy to see you back coaching. St. John's is very fortunate to have you. I think you guys are going to have another great season, and you are welcome here anytime, my friend.
Thanks, Ron. The feeling is mutual, and I'll be sure when I'm in town to ring you up.
Good. Steve Lavin, head basketball coach at St. John's. We continue on Sports Byline.